Give it up for the band. That was good. Man, that's two of my favorite songs right now. You can't get a, man, when we sing With Everything, I think, man, that's like God's song in heaven, right? With Everything, man, there's just something about that. It's just, man, it's primal. Man, With Everything, we give you the glory, God. As you guys know, or most of you know, our family just got back from our vacation. We were very refreshed. We went away with some of our staff members, and we're down in the Orange Beach Gulf Shores area. Had some lovely Alaskan king crab down there, my favorite meal. And so it was great to get away, but we were excited to get back. We drove about 10, 12 hours yesterday just so we could be here with you this morning. And we love coming. Man, I don't know how you guys feel about the state of Texas, but I love the state of Texas. The state of Texas is the best state ever. And so that's just my, and I'm from Oklahoma, so you know what it takes for me to be able to say that. And so anyway, we were so glad to get back. I mean, our road system is just incredible here compared to Mississippi. And so anyway, we're glad to be back, but I knew that it was gonna be a long drive back. And so I talked to Pastor Lucas about preaching, and we always love to hear from him. So at this time, I wanna welcome Pastor Lucas to the stage. Will you welcome Pastor Lucas to the stage?
A trip first service, y'all missed it. It was an experience. So how are we this morning? All right? Yeah. Man, y'all just did better than that. That was pitiful. Pitiful. Let's try it again. How are we doing this morning? I'll accept it. It's fine. You know, it kind of is what it is. I want to ask you a question. Wives, I know you're definitely going to relate to this, and any parents in the room, you will as well. Have you ever been in a situation where you had to change your tone in order to be heard? Wives, football season's about to start. When the game's on, you have to change your tone, don't you, to get your husband's attention? It just kind of happens. Parents, you ever notice you have to change your tone with your kids? Like, I love hearing the soft-spoken parents, like, okay, y'all need to quiet down. You gotta calm down. They can't hear you. It's okay. Sometimes our kids will look at us and they'll think we're mad. So I'm like, Bella, Reagan, hey. They look at us like they're in trouble. Say, it's okay, you're not in trouble. I just need to be heard, right? I need to make sure that I speak in a tone that you can hear me. Can y'all relate to that this morning? You ever find yourself in that situation where you need to change your tone in order for your message to really come across? I think this morning as we dive through our passage in Galatians, you're gonna hear that God kind of changes his tone towards us sometimes. There's moments of scripture where God speaks a little more pointedly. And Paul specifically does this in Galatians. We actually see in verse 20, he says, I wish that I could be with you so that I could change my tone, because I am perplexed by you. It's one of those moments where text just doesn't cover it, right? There's not enough capitalization, exclamation points, and emojis to get your point across, right? Like you need to just be able to raise your voice. You need to be able to change your tone in order to get your point across. For Paul, he was in one of those moments, because the Galatians were facing two systems of beliefs. One was this system and this idea that they follow the law, and that's how they measure up to God. And it really leads to slavery, right? There's restrictions within it. Then they had this place where there was a belief in grace and freedom. And this is what Paul had taught. And his frustration with them was because he knew they were not ignorant to the idea of grace. Back in chapter 1, he says, I'm astonished at how quickly you're leaving the gospel. He says, I'm astonished at how quickly you're forgetting, at how quickly you're turning from the gospel that I taught you. He finds himself in this position where he's urging the people to understand. And so he starts like this in Galatians chapter 4, verse 21. I love Paul. He doesn't hold back punches. He just starts swinging. He says, tell me, you who desire to be under the law, he says, do you not listen to the law? He says, you who desire to be under the law, do you not understand it? Do you not understand its purpose? Do you really comprehend what it would mean for you to be under the weight of the law? The repercussion that brings, what that puts in front of your life. It's funny, it's kind of like he's talking to children, right? Parents, again, you can probably relate to this. You find yourself in a moment with your child where you don't think they really understand what they're asking for, do you? We were just blessed and had the opportunity to test the limit of our family's love for each other and go to Disney World for a week. And we survived. It was great. We got rained on, we sweated a lot, we ate a lot, we walked a lot, we rode and laughed a lot, and we didn't kill each other. And so it was a success, right? And on the very first day, we had told our daughter Bella that, you know, she had saved up some gift cards and some money, and like, okay, when you get there, you buy whatever you want. Like, it's the one time, like, we're not gonna question it. This is your money, it's gonna save us a little bit of money, so you buy what you want. And so she had her heart set on a Mulan costume, but the very first day, as we're walking around just getting poured on, we pass this little umbrella stand. And when I say umbrella stand, you understand what I mean, right? These are cheap little umbrellas that they get on Oriental Trading Company for about 10 cents a piece, right? And then they draw on them with this little ink markers that ruins them from ever being used, right? It's like buying a coffee mug that can't go in the dishwasher. It's worthless, okay? And you get to that point. And so we pass these, and Bella stops and says, Daddy, I want one of those. So, Mommy, Daddy, I want one of those. We kind of stop, look at her, say, Baby, you sure? Like, you understand what that is. Like, you're not going to be able to use it. She's like, No, I want one of those. I said, Okay. It's okay, you want a big one or a small one? So, I want a big one. Okay, you sure you want a big one? No, I think I want a small one. Are you sure you want a small one? No, I think I want a big one. You sure you want a big one? Yes, I want a big one. All right, so we buy a big one. I go back to the park later that day, pick it up, bring it back, open it up. She said, Daddy, that's not what I wanted. My baby, we talked about this. I don't think you understood. Reagan was the same way, because you know the purpose of going to Disney is to push your children to their limits, right? You just see how long you can push them before they break down, right? Parents, we do the same thing. For us, it's like 2 hours, and we're broken, you know? But so we had pushed Reagan, and it was kind of some points of frustration where it's like, okay, I know he's tired, but he's misbehaving, so we're trying to get on to him. And I remember one moment getting down right before his face, and said, Bubby, I said, do you want me to spank you? Yes. I said, are you sure? You really want me to spank you? Yes. Okay. You know, I'll give you what you want. But I think it's one of those moments he doesn't really understand what he's asking for. And you kind of stand there asking, thinking, are you sure that's what you want? Do you understand what you're asking for? Do we not find ourselves in front of God in the same position, asking for things in our life, and God is looking at us as a loving father saying, are you sure? Are you sure that's what you want? It's similar with Paul. Paul, early in chapter 4, described himself and his love and concern for the Galatians as a parent. He says, you who say you desire the law, do you listen to it? Do you really understand what this means to be under it? Are you sure this is what you want? So to make sure, he explains. He dives into some illustrations. He starts in verse 22 and 23. He says, for it is written that Abraham had two sons, one by a slave woman and one by a free. But the son of the slave was born according to the flesh, while the son of the free was born through the promise. He uses the story of Abraham and his two children, one from Hagar and one from Sarah, as an illustration. And to kind of catch you up on that story, to make sure you're following along with us, Abraham and Sarah had been given a promise that from them would come a nation. But as they grew older in age, they began to worry about the possibility of them actually having a child. So they took matters into their own hands, and they decided to go with their best. And so Abraham had a son with Sarah's servant, Hagar. And that's when he had Ishmael. Now, years later, 14 years later, Abraham was finally given his son from Sarah, named Isaac. And we're going to cover the detail of that story later in the morning. But there's a lesson we need to understand from this. You see, our desire directs us towards either our best or God's blessed. Either our product or God's promise. What we desire in our life. You see, for the Galatians, it says that they desired the law. Their wish, their desire was to be under the law. And so it led to slavery. For Abraham, this led to Ishmael. But what about the best? God's desire was the best. It was his promise. For that, it would lead Abraham to Isaac. For us, God's best always leads to salvation. It's the natural versus the supernatural. The limited versus the limitless. Our best versus God's blessed. So he'd find himself asking, why not Ishmael? Why not our best? Because it's limited. When we rely on our best, we're restricted to what can take place. Our best will always lead to death. Our best will always lead to slavery. It will keep us under the foot of the law of religion. However, with God, the measure is limitless. With God and his best and his promise, we find salvation. So he's asking, are you sure? Are you sure this is what you want? He begins with a little history, but then he continues. And he uses the same story, but he uses it in a special way. He takes the story of Abraham and Sarah and Hagar and turns it into an allegory. He uses it as an illustration. And there's something magical about what he does here because it's unlike anything we really see. It's a divine revelation that could only have come from God. A story from the Old Testament and the picture Paul uses to paint with it that ties thousands of years of mankind together in our struggle that we have. He says this, starting in verse 25. He says, these two women serve as an illustration of God's two covenants. The first woman, Hagar, represents Mount Sinai, where people received the law that enslaved them. And now Jerusalem is just like Mount Sinai in Arabia, because she and her children live in slavery to the law. But the other woman, Sarah, represents the heavenly Jerusalem. She is the free woman. There's something great to consider here when we debate whether or not we choose our best or God's blessed. When we consider what God has for us compared to what we can produce with our life. We learn a lesson that the reality is that outside of the perimeters of God's promise, we will always miss the point of his promise. Outside of the perimeters of God's promise, we will miss the point. See, Paul paints a beautiful picture that leaves us at times asking again, why not Ishmael? Why not our best? Because here he takes these characters and he lines them up in such a way. He says, okay, Hagar is Mount Sinai. Now, Mount Sinai, if you remember, is what? This is where Moses received the commandments. So this is the law. And he says, now Mount Sinai and Hagar, they're Jerusalem. They're current Jerusalem. Now you have to understand what he's saying here. Because who were the Jews really descendants of? Proud descendants of? Sarah. It wasn't the line of Ishmael. It was the line of Isaac. It was the line that came from Sarah, not Hagar. However, as Paul paints this picture, this allegory, he says, no, 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 Jerusalem is Hagar. It's Mount Sinai. It's the law. Because the people are living in such a way that they're missing me. And because of that, they are enslaved by the law. Then he goes on to say, but Sarah is the heavenly Jerusalem. A notion that had not been heard of. Something that had not been taught. The heavenly Jerusalem, what waits for us, that is salvation, and that is freedom. He describes two worlds that he knew well, those who are slaves to the works of the law and those who are free in Christ. Because Paul himself was a former slave to the law, a former zealous Jew, one who stood to the letter of it. But on the road to Damascus, he encountered the person of Christ and found that freedom. He found God's blessed over his best. You see, when we talk about God's promise and we talk about the perimeters that are around it, it's a lot like an umbrella. When you consider the perimeters of God's promise, you consider the outer edge of the umbrella. When we stand inside, and when we walk and live inside the perimeters of God's promise, it works. That's the reason he drew them around us. That's the reason he's created them. All of God's promises will have perimeters in which he says, if you will stay within this, you will place yourself in a blessable position. If you stay underneath the perimeters I've set around this, it works. However, the struggle that we have is that we often step outside and we choose our best over God's blessed. And when that happens, we miss things. When we do that, we miss important things. You consider how all the stories we're talking about circle together here. Sarah and Abraham, when they stood within the perimeters of God's promise, they received Isaac. And from him birthed a nation that led to a king named David and a boy named Jesus, which all the way down the line led to our salvation from slavery of the law. But when they were outside of it, you have Ishmael. You have death. You have slavery. It doesn't work outside the perimeter. When you consider the Galatians, they were missing the purpose of the law because they were stepping outside of God's grace. Remember chapter 1, I'm astonished how quickly you forget. As they stepped outside of the perimeters of God's grace, forgetting his love and his mercy and going back to the law, they stepped outside of the perimeters of God's promise and they missed the purpose of the law. And in our allegory, Jerusalem was missing the person of Jesus by choosing to remain under the law, by choosing to remain outside of the bounds of God's promise, removing themselves from a blessable position. They found themselves enslaved to the law, missing who Jesus was, missing the person of Jesus. Sarah and Abraham missed the promise. The Galatians missed the purpose. And Jerusalem missed the person. Church, we have to consider, what are we missing today? Where in our life have we stepped outside of the perimeter that God has placed? And what are we missing because of it? Have we stepped outside of that perimeter in our marriage? And we're trying to go it alone, trying to fix it alone. What are we missing? Have we stepped outside the perimeter of God's promise with our children? How we parent them, how we raise them, keeping God first in our family? And if so, what are we missing? When we step outside the perimeter of God's promise, we will miss him. We will miss what he has for us. And I assure you that whatever you're missing it for will not work. However, if you choose God's best, you receive his blessed. You receive the blessing of God. Within the perimeter of his promise, it works. That's why he drew it around us. That's why he created it. Paul begins to end his allegory with this. He says in Galatians 28 and 29, "Now you brothers, like Isaac, are children of promise. But at that time, like he who was born according to the flesh persecuted him who was born according to the Spirit, so also it is now. When considering these two worlds, the flesh and the spirit, the slave and the free, we must remember that the flesh will always persecute the spirit. The flesh will always persecute the spirit. These two worlds cannot coexist together. They cannot coexist side by side within our lives. A choice has to be made between the two. And there's an urgency to this. This is the sincerity of Paul's plea. This is why he has to change his tone to help them understand that their best, which is only found in the law, is not does not measure up to the blessed that God can give. Their product of their life cannot measure up to the promise of God's. So a choice is demanded. Verse 30, Paul writes, "But what does the scripture say? Cast out the slave woman and her son, for the son and the slave woman shall not inherit with the son of the free." You see, we're often tempted to straddle both sides. We're often tempted to try to keep one foot in each world, to try to hold on to our best, hoping for God's blessed, stuck between two. It's similar to this. I grew up all through middle school and high school. Every summer and spring break, we'd go to the lake. We'd go to a friend of mine's lake house, and we'd go fish, we'd ski, we'd swim, just exhaust ourselves during the day, eat at night, go to sleep, do it again the next day. And there's one spring break I remember specifically because it was bitter cold, colder than usual for March in Texas, to the point where we weren't going to swim, we weren't going to ski, so we just fished. And as we came back to the dock, we had a boat full of fish. We were ready to fillet them, fry them, eat them, just have a great time that night. And we got to unload. So we had developed a system, right, where we'd kind of create a line. Start on the boat, we'd kind of stagger each other out and just pass the cooler after cooler, tackle box after tackle box. And as I had before, I found myself one foot on the boat, one foot on the dock. I was the middleman, right? And you've done these chains, you get in this rhythm, just one side to another, your left to your right, just passing things along the way. And what I noticed is as we keep doing this, and I'm pushing against the dock, I'm pushing against the boat, I noticed the distance between the two grew greater. And what I didn't realize was that no one had tied off the boat. And I found myself in a very immediate and severe decision. Because I'm not flexible. This is about the extent of what I got. And I had to decide immediately, either I jump to the dock or I jump to the boat, because the water is cold and it's not a choice. The longer I tried to stay and straddle the two worlds, the further I was stretched. And the more real the fall into that water seemed. See, church, as we continue to try to balance and stretch between two worlds, trying to hold on to our best and hoping for God's blessed, it's not possible. And this brings us all the way back to our narrative. This brings us back to the story of Abraham. Because Abraham and Sarah had grown weary, and so they accepted their best. And Ishmael was born. And then years later in Genesis 7, God comes back to Abraham, reminding him of the promise. Reminding him, saying, Sarah is going to give you a son. And Abraham's response, it says that he laughed at the thought of them giving birth to a son at such a late age. It says he laughed at the thought because he was restricted, because he was relying on himself. He was looking to his best. He was looking to what he could produce, not what God had promised. And so as he heard God give this promise one more time, he stopped and said, well, God, how about we take up Ishmael instead? How about you? We lift up Ishmael in the place of him, in the place of what you've promised. Why don't you accept my best instead? And I love God's answer. No. Profound and deep, right? God says, no. He says, no. He says, but Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son. And you shall call his name Isaac. Now, if you ever have doubted God's humor or sense of irony, you need to read this passage over and over and over again. Sarah has laughed at God. Abraham has laughed at God. And what does God name their child? Laughter. He says, no, no, you know what? Sarah will give you a son, and you will name him Isaac. And that means laughter. See, Abraham tried to lift up his best over God's blessed. He tried to lift up what he could do over what God had promised. But God would not accept it, simply because there's no substitute for what God will supply in our life. There's no substitute for what God has promised us. There's nothing we can produce. There's nothing we can do in our life that will equal to what God already has done for us, to what God can do through us if we will wait on his promise, if we will stay and walk within the perimeter of his promise. Instead, God encouraged Abraham, saying, just stay above reproach. Walk with me. Keep yourself in a blessable position. I want you to stay within my perimeters, and my promise will be there. You cannot lift up Ishmael. I won't accept it because that's not mine. Mine is better. Ishmael's line cannot lead to the Savior. God's promise always produces salvation. God's promise always leads us to salvation. Yet how often do we find ourselves trying to do the same thing? Trying to lift up our best before God, saying, God, take this. Take this instead. Let this be my substitute. How many times in our marriages have we tried to go it alone? Saying, God, I can fix this. I can fix this. I can fix this. And yet we find ourselves continuing to struggle. Peace nowhere in sight. God saying, I don't want your best. I want to give you my blessing. But you've got to stay in a position of blessing. You've got to stay within the perimeter of my promise. Invite me back into your marriage. Losing the grip of our kids to the world. Inviting him back into our relationship with them. Placing him first. This is why Paul is urging the Galatians to listen, because this is what the law does. The law restricts us to our best. It restricts us to what we can do, to what we can produce. And it removes the possibility of God's blessing. It removes the possibility of God's promise because we step outside of his perimeter when we choose the law. The law was never meant to save. Religion was never meant to save. The relationship with God was meant to save. The substitution of Christ was meant to save, not the law. But all through the Bible, they continue to try. Consider Abraham and Sarah trying to substitute Ishmael for God's best. God said no. Consider the Israelites, right? Just consider the position they were in. Over 400 years in slavery, waiting on the promise of God. And then it comes. And if you know God doesn't do anything small, right? When God comes to free his people, he does it in an extreme fashion. I mean, we see the highlight reel of God. This is ESPN top 10 in heaven, right? In heaven, trumpets blaring, da-na-na, da-na-na, as God just throws one plague after another. We see water turn to blood, frogs, gnats, flies, dead livestock, boils, hail, locusts, darkness. We see death pass through the town, taking the firstborn of every home, unless that home stays in the perimeter of God's promise. Because God said, if you will line the doorframe of your home with blood, death will pass over. If you will do this, if you will stay in the perimeter of my promise, if you will keep your home in a blessable position, fathers, if you will paint your doorposts red for the sake of your family, it says death will pass over that home. It says death will move past
And it did.
Those who weren't in the perimeter of that, they lost their first. But those who obeyed, those who stayed under the covering of God's promise, soon walked out of Egypt as a family. And the awesome thing about God is he didn't stop there. He's like, you know what? Top 10's not enough. It's bonus night. You know what? I'm going to part the sea. You're going to walk across on dry land. Oh, and by the way, you can't find your way. That's okay. I'm going to guide you with a pillar of fire by night and a pillar of smoke by day. Just because I can. Just because I'm that good. Just because what I have to offer is that great. But then what do we see happen? 40 days later, after they experienced the highlight reel of God's power, as their leader Moses is on top of Mount Sinai, receiving the law, what do? They settle for their best. After God has miraculously freed them, fulfilling his promise to bring them out of slavery, they take the gold that God gave them from their captures. They melted it down, creating the best they could. A substitute for an eternal God. A golden calf. I mean, a calf. Not even like a cool warrior dude, a calf. The best they could do. It had only been 11 years since God's promise before Abraham and Sarah settled for their best and had Ishmael. Only 40 days had passed since the Israelites had been miraculously freed by the hand of God. And then they settled for their best. Paul says that he was astonished at how quickly the Galatians were stepping away from God's grace to settle for their best. We need God's best. We need his provision. There is nothing we can substitute for it. There is nothing we can substitute for what God is already giving us. Because the beauty of God is God doesn't need a substitute. He's not looking to us saying, can y'all give me some help? I'm a little trapped up here. I need something from you. That's not what he's saying. In fact, who needed the substitute? We did. And he sent him. He sent his son as our substitute on the cross because he knew that our death would do nothing. Our death would leave us in the grave. However, the death of his son, the death of our substitute, changed everything because he was the promise. This was the fulfillment of the promise. This was God's best. This is how he blessed our life, by giving us a path from slavery to freedom, by giving us the opportunity to stand under the umbrella of his grace, walking in the perimeters of his promise. All possible with the proper substitute, with Jesus. There is no other. God's promise always produces salvation. Death will always pass when God is in the right place. Abraham tried to lift up his best in the place of God's blessed. What are we trying to lift up this morning? What areas of our life are we trying to get God to substitute our best effort for his blessed, for his promise, for his will? Church, I encourage you this morning to consider your life, to consider the battle for your home, the battle for your marriage, the battle for your kids, and to ask, am I pursuing God in this?
Have I invited God into this situation? Am I pursuing what He has for us? Or are we settling for our best? Are we restricted because we're relying on ourselves? Instead of accepting the limitless grace of God. I want to encourage you with Paul's closing. He says, therefore, brothers, we are not children of the slave, but of the free. For freedom, Christ set us free. For freedom, Christ set us free. So stand firm, therefore, and do not submit again to the yoke of slavery. He encourages the Galatians, do not submit to that again. Christ set you free for freedom, not for slavery. He set you free for life, not for death. So do not submit yourself again to the slavery which He already overcame. Do not restrict yourself by relying on your best, but instead walk within the perimeter of My promise. Keep yourself in a blessable position, and I will provide My promise. I will walk you through this, and death will not overcome us. Church, stand with us this morning.